Welcome to Venturi's Voice. Join me as I chat with big thinkers, decision makers, and leaders in the world of tech. If you like the show and would like to hear more from us, give us a follow on your favorite streaming platform. Welcome to the show, guys. Today we're joined by Hassani Jess, who is CTO at Simply Business. It's great to have you join us today, Hassani. Thanks for taking the time out of your busy schedule to do this with us.
Not at all, Ben. It's actually a pleasure to be with you and all your wonderful listeners. Yeah. Thanks for inviting me.
Great. It's a pleasure. We've got an interesting conversation ahead of us. The main topic is around building high-performing teams, which is very interesting. But, you know, let's get the ball rolling. So to get us started, I mean, it could be a good idea if you gave us a bit of insight into Simply Business and what your role entails there.
So Simply Business is the number one insurer of small and medium businesses here in the UK and landlords. So we insure about 700,000 landlords across the country for professional indemnity business insurance and other services to make sure that we protect their businesses the best way they can. I've been at Simply Business for just under 3 years now, and I was part of the team brought in to help us scale to that next level that we have. It's an ambitious business, and as my role as CTO, I have the pleasure of leading the technology functions, and so that's all the engineering teams and the service teams and the systems and infrastructure teams. Those people are the ones that I look after.
Excellent. So just to get a bit of background on yourself, what's your route into technology? How did you get to where you are today?
So it's an interesting question there, Ben. For me, I've been in technology about 30 odd years. So as man and boy, I'm a technologist, and it goes all the way back to, I think I got my first computer. I think I was 12 years old. My mum used to be a teacher, and she used to teach word processing. So I grew up with a typewriter and wanted to be a journalist. And then I kind of grew up a little bit more and found out journalism not that exciting for me. And then my mum brought home this wonderful bit of kit, which was a computer, an IBM 186. And I fell in love with that that computer. And I've been in technology ever since. So I went to university, studied electronic engineering and computer science. And then, like many people, I got my opportunity after graduating at one of the big companies here in UK. It was BT, Syntegra, as a young consultant. And my intro into technology was up the software engineering track. So I know many people will have come through one of those technology functions, like software engineering, or maybe even in security was kind of starting at that time, or data. And some others may come up the project management or the BA roles and things like that. For me, it was up the software engineering role. And I've been perfecting that craft for the last 20 odd years in different roles. So whether that is as a software engineer, as an individual contributor, and then moving into leadership roles, architecture roles for a number of different businesses. And then I got the privilege to run the show here at Simply Business. And it's been absolute fantastic time. It's been an absolute fantastic time to take all those experiences that you've learned over the years, some of those good and some of those not so good, and being able to then use those experiences to plow your own vision into a business like SB.
Excellent. That's brilliant. So if we fast forward to nowadays, you're CTO at Simply Business, and I'm just intrigued. So how many people would you say you managed, if you can put a number on them?
No, absolutely. So our technology function as a whole is around 200 and odd people. So it's about a quarter of our business. They've quite heavily skewed towards technology. We see ourselves as an insurtech. We use technology as much as possible. We're quite proud of that, that we really leverage technology to the hilt. We're quite innovative from that point of view. And when I joined, we had a team about 100 people. So we've doubled in those couple of years to meet the business's ambitions. So yeah, it's about 200 people, and that's all of our technology. We don't outsource, so there is no other company. Where some other businesses, they might have a much smaller internal technology department because they leverage an outsourcing provider. For us, we value that, and we manage that all ourselves.
Excellent. So on the topic of building high performing teams, you know, a lot of being a manager is kind of boosting your team up and giving them the option or the availability to, you know, scale up and learn new things. But from a point of view of the employee and, you know, progressing in technology, how do you get the right skills and how do you know what you're doing is on the right path, if that makes sense?
So at SB, I've got a few advantages that some may not have. I know, and many technology companies do have a similar advantage, and that advantage is learning is our number one core value. We've got core values in our business, and learning is the first one of those. And so therefore, I've just got an explicit directive to help my team to continue to learn. Now, most of us know most of our learning happens on the job. I think the statistics will say something like 70-odd% of our learning is on the job, and that is great. And because we're such a fast-paced growing business, the opportunity to learn is consistent. There's always an opportunity to learn something new, whether that be we're trying out a new business model, we're trying out a new way to serve our customers, or we're trying out a new technology to do something more efficiently. So that is something that is really consistent for us. However, that is on the job. Many of us do similar things. We also then have learning programs, right? So I have a training CLP, that's a community of practice, which is run by my technology function for the technology function. And their role is to just consistently and continuously be looking into the market at what is out there. So what conferences are aligned with our technology strategy? What training courses are out there that we could recommend to our technologists? What online resources are available to them? So that is what my COP do. They manage my training budget, and they do an amazing job of making sure that we deliberately educate ourselves on the right things. And I'm really, really proud of that group and what they do for me, because they are technologists. So they're not training professionals, and they are technologists, but they work very, very closely with our L&D department. But they do that bit of screening to say, is this training going to be valuable? Is it aligned with our technology strategy? Or is it just aligned with that personal individual's, so that individual's personal ambitions, which is fine too. So we support those things. And those go alongside what we do is our biannual skills audits, where we say these are all the skills that we care about, how are we doing? And then that's where we can look as a department to see, as a department, how are we doing on these areas that we think are going to be important to us to enable us to meet our strategy. Most of the time we do focus on individuals. So as a manager, you may be speaking to a person in your team and their own personal development plans and their own personal development goals. That's absolutely great. And then we also want to collate that and see, as an organization, as a body, as a group, are you any good at continuous integration? As a group, what is your capability in the cloud? As a group, how are you evolving your ability to leverage machine learning and data science technologies? And so that just gives you the ability to see, okay, are we moving forward holistically, or are you just really focused on the few key individuals who are already strong in some areas? And that's something you need to expand out, get them to level up some other people, or no, it's okay to stay that way. So yeah, we've got a number of little techniques and strategies to help us continually evolve our learning. And my team, they challenge me continuously on how can they grow, how can they develop, what's next, how can they stay ahead of the game. They do not want to be falling behind any of their peers that they see in the market. And I'm sure you and many of your other clients and colleagues, they will testify as well. The internet makes it very clear what other people are doing. Sometimes it gives a very rosy picture that somebody else is doing amazing things. And my team will see that and they'll say, why are we not doing that? Why are we not enhancing our capabilities similar to these other people that they see as competitors, even though they may not be in our same domain in insurance? They don't care about that. They will say, well, we want to be just as good as those people in social media. We want to be just as good as those people in manufacturing. We want to be just as good as those people in e-commerce or customer experience or whatever it may be.
That's brilliant. That's such a unique kind of way to, you know, grow a team and build a team up. I mean, what immediately strikes me is how do you know and how do you filter out what the best resources are? And do you accept new technology with open arms, or do you kind of tentatively accept it and kind of put the feelers out first before you go, right, this is what we're learning now, this is what's great?
So I think I'd take that question in reverse order. So
sure.
That question on accepting technology or how do you experiment? Many of us would love to say, oh yeah, the news thing, we see a blog post, we see a supplier's released this new beer kit, and yeah, we integrated it the next week because we're so cutting edge, we're so innovative. I don't follow that philosophy. So that's not my way of brain. I think if you're a really small business, you've got a small team, and you don't have a product that your customers are actually using, then you've got more opportunity to experiment and test some of these things. When you're a business who've actually got customers, right? So you're actually providing an existing service, you've got legacy. Right now, for me, legacy is not necessarily a bad word. Many people think that legacy is the thing you want to get rid of. I always say legacy is the reward of success. Right, you only get to have a legacy system because it was a successful one. And that legacy system may be 6 months old, it may be a year old, it may be 10 years old, it may be 20 years old or plus. The fact is, once you've got a successful system, just replacing it for the sake of replacing it is not a sensible business position. You want to replace that technology, you want to replace that system, you want to replace the language, you want to replace your infrastructure for a reason to take you forward. And that reason may be you've got to be more efficient, it's going to be more cost effective, it's going to enable you to iterate and grow faster, but you're doing it for that reason. You're not just doing it because it's the newest thing on the block. Most of us will say, yeah, the new thing on the block is there nearly every week. If you go to any of the AWS or Azure or Google Cloud presentations, they will proudly say, yeah, we are releasing a new service every week, if not multiple times a week. So therefore, if you literally just want to be using the latest and greatest of everything, you're not going to be delivering any business value. You're just going to be playing around with some of these new technologies. So for me, it's not just about doing something with a new technology just for the sake of it. It's about using the right technologies to address the right problems. Now, to your first question, I think it was on how do you know you've got the right people, right? And I think this is where I just go back to our learning value. We believe we've got the right people with the ability to learn, with the ability to grow, with the ability to adapt, and not only just the ability, with the desire to do so. So they want to grow, they want to adapt, they want to do new things. And so they're almost pushing back on me, saying, yeah, fine, we know we can deliver value in the old way, but we want to try these new things. We want to experiment. We want to see if there's a possibility to do things even better. And as a business and as a leader, we have to make space for some of those experiments. We have to make space for some of those opportunities to discover what is better for us. And it all comes back down to talent, right? All problems lead back to the same result, right? To the same answer. Do you have the best people that you can get that are going to take you on that journey? Now, for us, we have quite a a tough recruitment process, very similar to, I'm guessing, many people, where you go through many stages. There's technical assessments, there's cultural assessments, there's team work assessments. And the aim of that is just to get a view of the whole person that's going to be joining our business. And then our belief is, well, that whole person will be on that journey with us. And they will, yes, they'll be able to bring value in the short term, but they will also to help us bring value over the medium to long term, where we're not so sure on what that value is going to be. We just believe they're going to help us to deliver it.
Excellent. So what are some of the immediate benefits you've seen from working this way?
Well, I think the immediate benefit is our business has been successful. We've continually grown year on year in different ways. My team are continually increasing their engagement. We use engagement tools to assess how engaged are our team with our mission, how engaged are they working with me and for our business. And that is continually growing. And it's been a very good score over the years. And we keep challenging ourselves. We want an even more engaged team, because an even more engaged team is going to help make our business even more successful. So I think ultimately you look at those two factors. Is your business being successful? We all need our businesses to grow and to achieve its goals. And are the people happy? Are the people engaged in that mission? Or do they just see themselves as automatons just trying to make money for somebody else? Or no, they are embedded in that mission. They are embedded in, yeah, we are trying to do something better for our customers, and we're proud of what we're delivering for them and for each other. So for me, getting those two metrics together, that is one of those guides to say, yeah, things are going in the right direction. You're being successful.
Absolutely. And I find with people that work in technology, there's a common thread there. I'm going to risk painting everyone with the same brush here, but everyone seems to live and breathe technology. And I think when you're working for an organization, it's really important to kind of feed that hunger for people in tech to continue to learn. Even if it's just for, you know, something as simple as, you know, feeling productive and happy in the workplace. But I do find with technology, there is that drive that people have to continue to learn.
Well, you know, one of the things that I've seen in my career is that shift in learning and the pace at which you're expected to learn and what you're expected to learn. I remember when I first started, it was very much technical training, and it was the vertical of the T. You went deep, right? You went very deep into your particular niche thing. And that was very useful, because those niches lasted a long time. So if you were an Oracle DBA, you could have a whole career for 10, 15, 20 years being an Oracle DBA. Mm. If you were a Java programmer doing backend EJBs back then, you could have, you know, a good 10 years just doing that and nothing else. If you were a front-end developer using a particular framework or a particular framework to do with business process management, or a particular type of data center and the amount of infrastructure that you use, that could be your career. Right. And I'm a specialist in these areas, and I'm just going to keep going deeper and deeper in any one of these particular fields. Whereas today, technology has moved on that most of those things are commoditized. No one really cares about those things anymore. Mm. Those things we just expect to work, even as technologists, we expect to be able to go to a shelf and somebody else to worry about that. And I may want to use Oracle this year, and I might want to use Postgres the year after. And also, actually, I might want to also combine it with DynamoDB and do something else. And another part of my system may be using Mongo. So I want to use multiple types of data stores for my different solutions to have the right thing, read the right need. And I want the same engineer to use all four. Right. Now, so that is completely different to where we used to be, where we say, oh, no, everything is going to be on one big Oracle database, or everything is going to be on one big SAP system. So I think that need to have such a broad view of technology and the services that are available has just driven a different type of learning need. Now we don't want people who are just, yeah, I'm just fully focused on this one technology and I do not want to touch another one. if it's not Oracle, I'm not touching it. If it's not SQL Server, I'm not touching it. Now we're saying to people, no, I want you to be flexible enough to take on the responsibility of both. I'm not expecting to be as deep in knowledge on all of those things, but I want you to be able to meet our business needs on multiple different systems, and also maybe look at a third and a fourth and a fifth as the different problem domains evolve, and you are going to be leading that for me. So I think that is a big change that we've seen over the last 10 years with the proliferation of cloud services, where a lot of these services are much cheaper to engage with initially than they used to be. But they're changing all the time, and they are becoming more niche themselves to meet more specifically the different business problems that we all have.
Definitely. And I'm just curious now, because obviously there's more resources out there now than there ever has been. But in your opinion, and obviously you've been in the industry for some time now, I mean, obviously these resources open up more opportunity because it's far easier to learn these days. But with that means there's more competition. So would you say that it's easier to get into the industry now or harder than it was, say, 20 or 30 years ago?
I think it's that's a really difficult question to say easy or hard. I'd say it's different, right? So, the size of the industry is bigger than it's ever been, and it's continuing to grow. And we don't have enough people in it, right? So there's not enough people in our industry to meet the needs that we all have, which is why we all argue with each other over the talent that we have, and we pinch one from here and we lose one to there. We have quite a lot of rotation within the industry, which is good and bad. So I don't think it's easier or harder. I think it's different. I think one of the things that is changing is what we believe is necessary to get involved in the industry. So when I was coming into the industry, we believed it was necessary to have done your A-levels, and this is UK clearly, done your A-levels or your high school education, gone to university and done some form of technology degree, and then you become a technology graduate. And that was the perceived wisdom. That was the norm that most people went through for quite a long time. And in some places, that is still the norm. And even in the UK today, the norm is, yeah, we expect you to have some sort of degree in technology, whether that be Comsky or engineering or maths or something along those lines, because we believe that it's going to gear you up for a life in technology. And I think what we've seen over the last 3 or 4 years is a shift to where people are saying they're starting to test that and say, well, is it the degree that makes a difference, or is it the person? Right. So can I get that same person without the degree and they still be successful in a technology career? And I think many of us are starting to see actually even the degree itself, as useful as that is. And I do think there is value in those educational qualifications. But we're starting to learn, actually, it's not that qualification itself that makes that person individual. It's that person. And if you give that person a different type of training opportunity, they can still be successful in a career in technology. So I think those shifts are happening, accelerating, mainly because there aren't enough people going through that old system. There aren't enough people through that old system to meet all the needs that we have. And also the people that have come through the old system maybe not meeting the needs we have. We want a bit more diversity of thought. We want a bit more diversity of capability and experience and background. And maybe the old way of doing things was just giving us a very homogenistic view of a technologist. Whereas now we want more dynamism in our teams. And I think a lot of that comes from, one, what I talked about, the need to be able to be flexible in what we learn and our aspirations. But also, our business models are continually evolving, and we need people who are going to contribute to that evolution of the business models. The business models of yesteryear that would last a decade, 2 decades, now most of us are trying to look at business opportunities every 5 years, or maybe even shorter in some cases. Startups are looking at new business models every year. And they, okay, we started off this, we've done some experiments and tests, or we've pivoted to something else. So I think that whole need to try different things and to grow in different ways is also affecting the pipeline of talent that we want to come into our teams.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I'm just intrigued about what the balance is between hiring for culture and hiring for technical ability. What would you say that is? Which is more important, in your opinion?
It's a tough one. No, I know the right answer is hire for culture. That is the right answer. I get that. And I do believe, actually, yes, hiring for culture. If you had to only have one, you'd hire for culture, because learning is part of our culture and that person will be able to learn to do what you need them to do. Depends on the role and depends on the needs of the business and the timing and your strategy. So in some places, you might be able to say, I can invest in this space, right? So I don't need an immediate return on that investment because I've got time to look into that. So I could hire somebody who skews more to the culture and less to that technical skill, whatever that technical skill may be. But in another area, you might be thinking, no, I've got a gap in this team and I need somebody who's going to be able to start contributing into that team in short order. So yes, they need to be able to fit into that team culturally. They need to be able to work in a team. Clearly that's a cultural need, but I don't have the time to wait for them to learn that particular technology, right? So I'm expecting them to be bringing that expertise into the team themselves. So I think it depends on the role, the strategy that you've got for each different role. Now, when you look at some of the bigger businesses that I've worked at, they would focus much more on the cultural aspect of that intake, right? If you're going to take on 100 graduates or 1,000 graduates or 2,000 graduates, you're clearly not doing it just because they have the technical experience and capability, because they probably don't. You are just looking at culturally, do they have all the dynamics that we need to grow? However, if you're going to be recruiting a senior solutions architect, you're going to be expected, you're going to be bringing some expertise to the table, not just a cultural fit and your desires to learn and to adapt to this business. So I think it all depends on the role.
So this leads us quite nicely onto managing a team. So when you found that team, how do you get a team to gel and make sure and ensure they're using the right practices?
Now, so I think you're right. This is really a good follow on from the last conversation, because a team is not just one thing. So not all teams are the same. Not all teams need to be the same. They don't all need the same characters. Now, I'm a football fan, and not every football team is the same by any stretch of imagination. Not every football team has the same manager. Not every football team has the same goals. Some football teams are trying to get promoted. Some are trying to not get relegated. Some are trying to win. Some are just trying to stay mid-table. And so they need different dynamics in their team. And I think that goes the same for us. We can have different teams that are fit for our purpose and fit for our needs, and we need them to gel in our particular way. So if you're in a team, if you're trying to build a team like we are, that is trying to grow and is trying to push boundaries, I need people in that team who are comfortable with being uncomfortable. I need people in that team who are really happy to ask questions, to test, to push back, to challenge. That's what I need in my team. Whereas if I'm in a different team and it's a support function, that is not what I need. I need you to really just keep things going. It's not really about challenging everybody and really pushing the boundaries. It's about, no, making sure everything is on an even keel, making sure everything is moving in the right direction. So the dynamic in those teams and will be very different. And I think that is one of the privileges that we have as leaders, is to help manage where we focus each of those different teams and the dynamics that we encourage in each of those different teams, and helping those teams see the value in how they operate. So just because you may not be shoveling new snow in your particular team does not mean you're less valuable, right? And I think that is one of the challenges that we've had over the last 5 or 10 years, is that for many people, they perceive, oh, the garage team, they're the cool team, right? Because they're doing something new, they're doing something in inverted commas sexy, and oh no, but you're the BAU team. You're the team making all the money. You're the team serving all the customers, but you're not the cool team, right? And so we can give that different focus and different emphasis to each team. And for me, that's completely wrong. They're both valuable for very different reasons. And so you need different types of people, different types of talent in each of those teams. And they need to be valued, and they need to know that they are valued.
Mm. And if we think about diversity now, it's incredibly important, especially now more than ever. So how does diversity impact high performing teams, you know, hiring for diversity?
So you're absolutely right. Diversity at the moment, and to be fair, not just now, been an increasing topic over the last half decade, maybe even longer. It has been growing in importance, and for me personally, I'm just really pleased that it's moved out of the realm of this is a good thing to do to this is a necessary thing to do.
Definitely.
It's necessary for our business to succeed. It's necessary for our industry to evolve. It's necessary for the individuals to meet their, to be their best selves, to meet their own expectations. Where I think initially it was, no, it's the right thing to do. We should just do it because it's the right thing to do. Now, again, for me, doing the right thing is the right thing anyway. So that's easy enough. Just say, we should have been doing it the whole time because it's the right thing to do. But moving it to also it's a needed thing to do just gives it that business goal-centered approach to making it successful. So for me, having diverse teams is definitely ambitious for us at SB. We put a lot of emphasis behind it. Authentic diversity is one of our technology pillars in our strategy. And the focus there is I believe that having diverse teams will enable my teams to be more successful because I need that diversity of thought. I need that diversity of experience. I need that diversity of approach to really test all of our assumptions and help us to get to the right goals in the end. I was doing a presentation recently on this, and I shared some of our challenges. And one of the things about having diversity is it's not easy. Right. It's in the very kind of definition of itself. It's not easy because you're saying, oh, I want different opinions. I want people who think differently. And when you've got people with different opinions, that is harder than people who have the same opinion.
Mm.
Right? A homogeneous group just feels nicer. A homogeneous group just feels like, yeah, we get on. We all agree with each other. We're very brotherly or sisterly. We've just got a nice connection. It feels really, really good. But we all also know that that can lead you to down a road of destruction. You also know, yeah, groupthink is not a positive thing in the long term. And you contradict that with, or you contrast that with a diverse team where it can feel like these guys are at loggerheads, right? These guys don't agree with each other. But that's the culture that you want to foster. So one of the things that we did was we acknowledge that diversity will bring in different opinions, and different opinions will bring in conflict. Conflict is something that we want to encourage and foster. However, we want to encourage that conflict in a way that's progressive. So it's not about being at loggerheads and ignoring each other. It's about being professional and understanding each other and utilizing that conflict to take us forward, utilizing that conflict to get us to a progressive conclusion. So we did a lot of training internally on how can we have difficult conversations. How can we deal with that conflict in our teams in a way that takes us forward? It was quite successful. It took us a little bit of time to get there because I really wanted us to get good at it. I wanted that to be a muscle that my team have. And I'll just really encourage other people, if you're really pushing for diversity, you're really pushing to have a lot of difference in your team, just acknowledge, yep, conflict is part of that. Don't try to push it away because that is the very nature of what's going to help that conclusion to be more positive. But sometimes we need those tools to deal with that. And I think as senior execs, sometimes we take for granted we have those skills because that's kind of what we do, right? Our job is to have that healthy conflict in an executive team to make sure that the business isn't just doing random things, but you've got a strategy, it's moving in the right direction. You can all get behind that because you've really tested it. You really poked it from all sorts of different directions. So sometimes we can take for granted, yeah, we've got those skills. Surely everybody else has those. And if you're a bit earlier on in your career, you may not have those skills. In fact, you're more than likely not going to have those skills. You're more than likely going to get offended by someone contradicting your own idea, saying your idea is not great, calling your baby ugly. You're probably going to get offended by that, even though, to be fair, most of us execs, we still get offended by that too. But we've got the skills to recover from that and get over it and realize, no, this was for the common good. It's not a personal attack on me.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm just thinking now about aspects of a team. So if you were going to give someone some advice who's looking to build a new team, could you put some of the most important aspects down and just say these are the, say, three most important things to build a successful high-performing team?
Yeah, so for me, the number one thing, and it's the big C word, communication, right? And that is the be-all and end-all of a team, because without any communication, you don't have a team. You've only got individuals. So the people need to be able to communicate with each other. Now, that communication can be different. And in today's world where we're all on lockdown at the moment, a lot of our communication is either over a video conferencing or asynchronous. So whether that be on messaging applications like Slack and Teams and others, if it's going to be over email, I know for me, I'm becoming less and less reliant on email, but there are some certain asynchronous communications that really needs to be fostered in the team. Are these people able to communicate? And your leader in that team, whether that be a manager or a senior leader, whatever it may be, needs to be the primary example of that communication. How is that leader communicating with everybody? How is that leader bringing everyone together to communicate at different times on different topics? So for me, communication is the number one piece. The second bit, which is a medium to longer term goal, is trust. Most of us will really be investing a lot in how do we build trust in our teams. We need people to trust each other professionally, that when you say you're going to do something, you get it done, or you do the very best you can to get it done. And if it doesn't get done, it's not because you weren't doing your job. You didn't get it done because there was a factor that we hadn't thought of together, and that is why we weren't able to achieve that goal. But other than that, you do what you say you're going to do. And so I think building trust professionally is really, really important. But also building trust personally is really important, which leads back to communication. Most of us read into each other's actions based on our perception of you. So if you send me a note saying, oh, there's a problem, and I trust you, I'm going to read that with a certain tone. However, if I don't trust you, I'm going to read it with a completely different tone and think, oh no, Ben is attacking me. He's saying they're the problem, and I've got to go and sort it.
Yeah.
This is not an invitation to us working together to get to the other side. So building trust in a team is really, really important. And one of the things that we've seen is, and it's part of our culture, we're quite an open company. We're quite open and ready to be vulnerable with each other. If that personal vulnerability, so sharing each other's lives, helps you to then trust each other professionally, because I've got a human connection with you. I know that you've got children, or that you don't have children, or that you're struggling to have children. I know that you've got an elderly parent or a sick parent, or you don't have any parents. I know that you love to go to sunny holidays or winter holidays or whatever it may be. So by having that context about an individual, that fosters an environment of trust that we can then leverage in our day-to-day interactions around that team's goals. And that leads me on to the third one, which is the team needs to be bought into the goal. A team that is not bought into that goal, into that mission, you're just going to be fighting an upward battle. They will do the bare minimum to get whatever is in front of them done. but they won't be pulling out the extra stops. And when things get hard, you're going to have to do a lot of heavy lifting as the leader of that team to get them over the hump of whatever challenge they're facing. So the team really needs to be bought into the mission, the goal of that particular team. And for us, I've got a number of teams. All of them have slightly different goals. So the team that I have that focus on my DevOps have a very, very different goal or mission compared to my team that's focusing on marketing systems, which has a very different goal or mission to my teams that focus on our cloud infrastructure and et cetera, et cetera. So each team will have their own mission, and the individuals need to be bought into that, which comes back to if the leader in that team, do they trust the leader in that team that the leader's got their best interest to help them meet that mission? And that goes back to how are they communicated to about that mission? So for me, those three things really kind of go hand in hand amongst a load of others that we all could spout on about. But those are three things that I think really would help any team to be successful.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And on the topic of lockdown, and teams are obviously physically separated. And as a manager, how do you motivate your team when you're not, you know, physically with them? Have you got any tips or advice for that?
This is a tough one, because for us, we loved each other's company beforehand. In the office, there'd always be cakes, there'd always be donuts, there'd always be food flying around. I love food. And there'd always be stuff happening in the office. And clearly that is not possible anymore. But what we have done is communication has been dialed up. So with me, my team, my directs, I meet with them every morning for 15 minutes before the day. We just catch up. Not about work. So it's not a daily stand-up where we come and say, what did you do yesterday? What are you going to do today? What block? It's nothing like that. This is just a personal connection. And it's really just to give everybody the opportunity to have a human conversation, because not everybody does that. And I did that with my team so that they would do it with their teams and they would do it with their teams, and it would go through our whole organization. Everybody would have that opportunity to connect. Mental health is a big struggle for many people at this time, especially for those who are single, who maybe live alone or maybe even a flat share, and they have the confinement for them or the isolation for them is much more painful than it is for someone like myself who's got a home office and who have a family and I'm surrounded by people all the time. So I have a very different dynamic, and we have to appreciate that for some people isolation and lockdown is not that same experience. So reaching out to people, dialing up communication, I think it's really important. And from what I understand, I think a lot of businesses at the heart of the pandemic or at the beginning did that. You know, they really dialed up the communication, and most people appreciated that. For us, I've continued that. We continue to connect. And then we're also now looking at little fun things to do as a team. So we have a Friday tech Zoomed in, and we have a bit of fun together. Maybe if bring your beer, bring a glass of wine, bring a hot cocoa, bring a coffee, bring a glass of water, and we're going to just enjoy each other's company for 15 minutes and celebrate some of the successes that we've had that week. Some of my teams, they do team lunches and team games and team escape rooms and all sorts of things that they would have done previously physically. Now they're using some of these online tools. So I think those are working fairly successfully. But to be honest, I think I'm in the same boat as everyone else. I'm looking forward to the day that we can all just get back to some of those really pleasurable things together.
Mm, that's great to hear. So I'm interested in yourself, actually, maybe just to wrap things up. Your management and leadership style is brilliant. So I'm intrigued as to how you've developed that. Was that natural as you've been in the industry for some time and you've kind of naturally progressed into management and it comes naturally to you? Or have you kind of crafted it, and do you use resources to learn about these things?
Yeah, I was born an amazing leader. I'm only kidding. Actually, it is something that I do focus on continually. I'm always trying to improve. I was trying to learn myself. I do believe that leadership is a privilege at whatever level of leadership that you're operating at. And for me, that is really, really important to continue to evolve that with best practices and things that you've learned from other people. Now, I use many, many resources, and some may say I'm obsessed with some of them. One of my favorite at the moment is a very popular book by Patrick Lencioni. In fact, he's got a series of books, but I think the most popular one of his is The Five Dysfunctions of a Team. And that focuses on trust as the kind of fulcrum to help teams to grow and to succeed. And it really resonates with my style. So I really enjoy his work and the series of books that he has shared. But then there are YouTube, I would say, is probably my second biggest influence. There are so many resources on YouTube that you can find to look at leadership. And for me, it's not just about, okay, a leadership guru says, this is what you need to do. It's about listening to different perspectives, listening to different people and the tools and techniques and the tips that they have, and seeing, okay, which one of those are appropriate for you at the time that you're at. Right. So I just talked about my Friday afternoon session with my team, and it works really, really well. But we're a team of 200. If I was a team of 20,000, that probably is not going to work so well. You have to do something completely different.
Yeah.
And if we're a team of five, we might be saying, why would I wait till Friday? I can do that anytime I want. We should do that every day. So I think some of these tools and techniques and tips that we learn from the different gurus, we then have to adapt them and make them appropriate for our own context, for what we're trying to achieve. So yeah, for me, I read books all the time. I listen to podcasts quite frequently, even some really basic ones. I listen to those, and sometimes they give you little tips and techniques that you didn't have because you've learned certain areas of your craft on the job, and the jobs that you particularly had didn't give you the tools in every single scenario. So, oh, I didn't realize that. That's a really good little tip or technique. So I think that's that. And then finally, just networking. When I go to conferences, I do get to speak to other senior leaders and get their perspectives on things. And it really does help you to shape out your own way of doing things.
Mm. It's fascinating. You know, thanks so much for coming on the show. I mean, I think your team are very, very lucky to have you as a manager. I mean, been fascinating. So thanks so much for coming on the show today, Hassani.
Not at all, Ben. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show, give us a follow on your favourite streaming platform.